This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. When the Edward Snowden leak debacle broke, the president tried to get out ahead of the matter by claiming that he always wanted to take a fresh look at the ways in which the National Security Agency was collecting data and clarify the rules. Well, a panel of presidential advisors appointed to do just that has released its recommendations. Some of what the NSA is doing, this panel doesn't like, including sifting data from Americans' phone communications, creating pipelines from the private sector to monitor Americans' behavior, and it's recommended that spying on the private communications of foreign leaders be limited or curtailed. But the panel did say it believed it was fine for the president to have access to these data, not for the NSA or other spy agencies to have this capability on their own. David Sanger joins us now, national security correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. David, welcome.
Thanks, John. Great to be back with you.
So what is the likelihood these recommendations will be followed and that we would even know that they were followed if it really involves the NSA changing its behavior?
Well, one of them, a minor one, relatively minor one, the president's already rejected. One of the recommendations is that the NSA director not be the same person as the commander of U.S. Cyber Command, which does cyber defense and cyber offense. Right now, those two jobs are held by one person. The president's already said that our cyber future and our surveillance future are so inextricably linked that you can't separate those jobs. But all the body language from the White House yesterday was that the remaining recommendations, or at least most of them, and there are 46 in this 300-page report, are likely to be adopted in whole or in part. And I think if you had to go summarize where the committee came out here, what they said was, while many of these operations should continue, with a few notable exceptions, they either have to do it with much greater oversight or approval from the president, from the Congress, or from the courts. They said, for example, that if you're going to spy on foreign leaders, that decision has to be made by policymakers who are weighing the economic and diplomatic downsides, not just by intelligence officials.
But doesn't this create a legal morass in the sense that the FISA court is supposed to be the kind of probable cause arbiter here of whether something is permitted or not? To add the president into that chain sort of makes it sound a little like the old Iran-Contra days where you're not permitted to do something. Oh, we'll just have the president sign a directive and then, boom, we've got another form of blank check.
I think that that may be conflating two different parts of the recommendations. The FISA court would still be the only one that ruled about looking at the telephone metadata of Americans. That's
right.
What it looks at. But the difference is that they would have to issue, if the recommendation was taken up, they would have to issue an individual order. So they couldn't just have a blanket order and then some analysts say that John Hockenberry's telephone record should be looked at. Instead, they would have to go to the court and say, this Hockenberry fellow is very suspicious, and get an individual order for that. On the foreign leaders, right now the court plays no role at all because the NSA is a foreign intelligence collection organization. And for them, they're simply saying that if it's a national leader, somebody's got to be making a bigger decision about what the cost is if this gets revealed. And, of course, that was the Angela Merkel case, right, where all of a sudden the biggest backlash is almost economic more than diplomatic, as people in Germany, I was just there last week, talk about segmenting the internet to try to keep it away from the NSA and so forth. So in those cases, they'd want the president or his other political leaders to make the decision.
Finally, in principle, does this group of advisors think that the president should have access to the raw data from the NSA or no, that it should always be filtered by the national security establishment and that under very strict rules, according to this document?
The president always has access to the raw data that underlies the intelligence assessments he's given. How much of that he wants to go through is another question. You could argue that during the Iraq war, President Bush would have been advised to go through a little bit more of it, right?
Right.
On the other hand, one of the interesting elements here is that for the first time, this would extend to foreigners who are monitored the same kind of privacy protections that Americans have under the Privacy Act. So, for example, if we collected information about a foreigner, an ordinary citizen here, that could not be released to other government agencies or to the public, just as information collected about Americans has to be protected. And that's an interesting concept. It doesn't extend full Fourth Amendment protections to foreigners, but it does enable the U.S. to say, we're not just collecting on your citizens and then handing the data around the U.S. government.
A rule book after the fact for the NSA from a presidential panel. David Sanger, thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
David Sanger, national security correspondent for our partner, The New York Times.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.